I know Beth already did announcements, and she announced this, but I want to emphasize it a little bit here. So next Sunday is Father's Day. It's the Father's Day barbecue. There are things that we do, although I'm going to say this, and this is, okay, so you all get to be in on a little bit of a joke, I guess, and you get to tease somebody because they're not here. Is that okay for a pastor to do from the pulpit? I'm calling somebody out for not being here. The Slussers aren't here. I think it was Zia said that, back up. Barbecue, we have a sort of tradition, and that's, you know, it's kind of like Easter, you know, hey, ladies, wear your big hats. Fathers, wear your Hawaiian shirts, right? Kind of a thing, right? Because it's a barbecue. It's supposed to be laid back. It's my marker to when I allow myself to wear shorts in preaching. It's from Father's Day forward. And then when school starts, I go, oh, I guess I got to be an adult or something and put pants on. And so that's always, Katja, you look so appalled by that. So Scott, though, made the comment to Zia that, when did Hawaiian shirts happen? Like, he was like I've never heard that. And I'm like, how does he never? Well, it dawned on us why. It's because Scott's always flipping the burgers. Him and Tom are flipping burgers there. And it was like, wait a minute, they shouldn't be flipping burgers. Somebody else should be flipping burgers. Just a thought there. So Scott was always oblivious. But I'm like, maybe it's also because he's not here to hear the announcement to wear you can wear a Hawaiian shirt. And ladies, you can wear Hawaiian shirts too. It's not a Father's Day exclusive thing. But it's not a Hawaiian barbecue, unfortunately, sorry. It's just burgers. Service will be outside, presuming weather, because it is Oregon, and while it looks really nice today, it could snow. It can. We know this. That's happening there. And this will actually, for what it's worth, I'm just going to throw it out there, and then we're going to move on. This will be my first Father's Day service here in 2 years. In fact, it was this last Friday was the 2 year anniversary of my father's death. So that happened just before Father's Day. So I wasn't here on Father's Day there. And then, of course, last year, Father's Day, Mick gave the message because I was in Houston on my way back. So I was listening to Mick on my phone in a Houston airport. So it'll be my first Father's Day since then. So there it is. So this morning, we're getting into another parable. I hope it's okay to be a little informal at the moment. I don't like this parable. I don't like this parable because it's confusing. It doesn't make a lot of sense. It's kind of contradictory to what Jesus has already taught and what Jesus will teach. There are moments where I believe that I would like to go to heaven and ask Luke why. I know that when I get there I won't, but I like to think I would. Like, why record this one? So the truth is, if we look at this parable that we're about to look at, this is the parable of the dishonest servant, dishonored steward. If we look at it as in a vacuum, completely isolated from all other teachings of Jesus, this is bad teaching, right? Every pastor is allowed a bad sermon, right? There's an old joke. I'm getting way off my script already. So there's an old joke that a pastor, one day, he goes into the kitchen and he opens up a drawer he has not opened before, right? For whatever reason. He opens it up and there are a few eggs in a carton inside this drawer. And to which he's like, dear, why are there eggs in the drawer? And she goes, well, every time you preach a bad sermon, I put an egg in the drawer. And then when I get to a dozen, I sell the dozen. And he goes, oh. And he looks and he goes, well, there's only a couple eggs. And she goes, yeah, I sold the other dozen last week. The idea, though, is that we're allowed, every now and then, a bad sermon. Is this Jesus giving a bad sermon? Because let's face it, there's got to be some editorial issues in the Gospels, right? How did this one slip in? Okay, I'm being super facetious and maybe even disrespectful to the writing at the moment. There is a reason for it. And no, it is not a bad parable. It's not a bad sermon. We're bad at reading it. That's the problem. And so I looked for help, and I've preached this. We're in a stretch of parables, and then we did the parables, if you remember. So I've already preached this. And I struggled with it then. But this particular time, I turned around and I said, you know what, I want to look. I'm going to stand on shoulders of other giants. And so I looked to see what others had to say about this. And in particular, I looked to John Piper. And because Piper actually addresses this in a little Q&A thing that I found. And it was interesting. He says, sometimes what we have to look at it's not what the parable actually says, but what is the positive aspect of something in it that Jesus is actually addressing. So it's not the actual parable, but it's what he's using the parable. What's the positive thing? And I think that kind of just, you know, puts a little light on it. And it says, okay, so I need to be looking for it, which we always should be looking for something, not just read it and go, oh, okay. Because if you read this parable and go, oh, okay, this is what this parable tells you, and if you want to, you can check out now with this really bad teaching and just go on with it. You know what? Do whatever you need to do to look out for you. Because that's what this parable teaches. It's absolutely what Jesus says. So what does Jesus actually mean? So with that, if we can get it to go. There we go. He also said, actually, let me back up. Remember, we just got done with the parable of the lost sheep, lost coin, lost sons. Big audience. But then Luke records, he also said to the disciples, meaning all in that same moment of teaching, he then turned to his disciples. This is kind of a little bit more of an isolated audience. However, at the very, very end, you'll see that it's not as isolated as it might seem. So he also said to the disciples, there was a rich man who had a manager. And charges were brought to him that this man was wasting his possessions. And he called him and said to him, what is it that I hear about you? Turn in the account of your management, for you can no longer be be the manager. And the manager said to himself, oh, what shall I do? Since my master is taking the management away from me, I am not strong enough to dig and I'm ashamed to beg. I have decided what to do, so that when I am removed from management, people may receive me into their houses. So, summoning his master's debtors one by one, he said to the first, how much do you owe my master? And he said, well, 100 measures of oil. Well, he said to him, take your bill, sit down quickly, and write 50. So he just cut the debt in half, right? And then he said to another, how much do you owe? And he said, well, 100 measure of wheat. And he said, okay, well, take your bill, and you write 80. Took 20% off, right? The master commended the dishonest manager for his shrewdness. For the sons of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own generation than the sons of light. And I tell you, make friends for yourselves by means of unrighteous wealth, so that when it fails, they may receive you into eternal dwelling. Is Jesus actually commending dishonest gain in this parable? The answer is yes. He's using this picture of dishonest gain to teach something else. But we have to look at it with the context of all of Jesus' teaching, not just this one little moment, because this one little moment says this, you know what? You need to look out for yourself. So look out for yourself, because at the end of the day, everything else is going to fail, because that's what the shrewd manager did. And he just said the shrewd manager has been commended for this action. Because any other time we've read a parable, usually the person in authority is who? Well, that's God. In this parable is the guy who, not the shrewd manager, but his boss, is this God. And if this is God, is he then turning to the shrewd manager and saying, good job? Let's break it down. So you got a man who's, let's just say, not performing his job the way he should be. He's taking advantage of his job. He's got a cushy job, and he's just been called out on his cushy job. He's not actually doing what he needs to be doing. So he panics, because at the end of the day, he doesn't want to go flip burgers. He can't go do labor. He's suited for management. He's suited for sitting on his rear and collecting money. He's certainly not going to go beg. Really, what we're saying is he has absolutely no real work skills. There's a moment in one of my favorite movies. It's the very beginning of it, Ghostbusters. theological moments from Ghostbusters. No, it's not theological. But they're getting booted from the university because, let's face it, they're taking advantage of the resources of the university, the Ghostbusters, the soon-to-be Ghostbusters. And in that process, then they start stewing up, well, maybe we need to go into business for ourselves, to which then one of them turns to the other and says, oh, no, I've worked in the private sector. They expect results. That's this moment. He's like, I can't go out there because somebody's going to expect me to actually do the job. And I've been living this life pretty cushy here. I don't have to worry about it. And now he's been called out for it. He has no future plan. It's only about today. And that becomes part of the point of what's happening here. So he devises the plan. Before people know he's not actually in charge of anything, he goes and he garners a little bit of favor with them and cuts their bills. Kind of tells you a little bit about who he is. It says that he's wasteful of his master's stuff. And here he's technically, it's a version of embezzlement, isn't it? And that's what's happening. And maybe that's actually why he's getting fired in the first place. He's been skimming off the top. So in this moment, he's actually defrauding his soon-to-be former employer, right? He's doing this before anybody knows he got fired. It's a little bit of a, I scratch your back, you scratch my back. And so he gives them, in a sense, a very generous way out of their debt so they might look kindly on him, because there's going to come a very soon moment where he's going to be in need and he's going to be saying, hey, you remember when I took care of you? So don't you think you should take care of me? I could just stop right here and say, do you live your life that way? Do you only do something for somebody else because you hope that you get something in return later down the road? It's an investment. So what's very odd in this parable, kind of like the previous parable with the lost son, we don't necessarily see any real resolution at the end. We see this very bizarre moment where he's commended. Hey, that's clever. In fact, that's that shrewd word that means clever. And so the foreman, hey, that's clever. But you don't necessarily see what happens next with him, do we? We don't see where this guy goes. The former employer is impressed, doesn't necessarily become angry. In fact, we have a different parable where you have a guy who, he has a debt. He gets excused of the debt. Then he turns around and demands a smaller amount of debt from somebody else. And we see a resolution. The first guy gets mad, throws him in jail. We don't see any of that. He doesn't go to jail for defrauding him. He's obviously defrauded him multiple times now. And he's caught in all of it. But at the same time, we don't see him getting rehired either, do we? I mean, yeah, that's clever, but not clever enough to rehire him. So is Jesus commending this sort of get yourself ahead mentality? Is that what he's actually teaching? Because he's pulled his disciples and said, you know what? You would do good to be like this guy. What does that mean? What is Jesus teaching here? Who is he teaching? Again, he's teaching the disciples. There's a carryover from the previous lesson, isn't there? That this is from this general audience to this exclusive audience. We have some things that are happening in verse 8. The sons of this world, that's the sinners, the Gentiles, the not sons of God people. And he says, you know what? They're smart. They're clever. Shrewd is a positive word. It means they're prudent. They're wise. This guy is acting out of a self-preservation. He's in a bad spot and he's doing something to take care of it. You ever know anybody who's been in a bad spot and tries to take care of it? In fact, almost every drama and or sitcom follow the same pattern, doesn't it? I mean, you could take a modern show context, but it's not really modern anymore, but the show Breaking Bad. You got a high school teacher who has no health insurance. He has cancer. Spoilers. I mean, first episode. But if you watch the show, he becomes a drug empire. Why? Well, it starts out with hey, I can make a couple quick bucks to fix this problem. That's all I'm doing. Get in, make some money. You know what it does? It creates more problems and more problems and more ego. And along the way of the show, you start really, as the audience, you got to ask a big question. Am I rooting for this guy? Why am I rooting for this guy? Why has he become the sympathetic? Why do we root for Robin Hood? It's still theft. you know Robin Hood's the bad guy, right? He still steals. It doesn't matter who you steal from. But we go, oh, the greater good. What about self-preservation? What about taking care of your own? What will you do to take care of your own? What will you do to take care of you? What this guy's really doing is long before Carnegie ever said it, he's winning friends and influencing people. Isn't that the way business works? Shouldn't that be the way we work? Be good in your community so your community is good to you. Jesus is actually saying that the world is better at knowing how to work with its own people than we are working with the world, or even with our own people. Now, it's interesting. You'll go back to the religious leaders, and again, at the very, very end of this passage, Jesus circles back around to that. Actually, I should say Luke circles back around to it. But we look at the religious leaders. It seems they're only interested in people when they get something out of the people. And if there's nothing to get, then they don't want anything to do with them. In fact, they just dismiss them outright. Think about the Pharisee and the publican, right? The Pharisee's all like, I'm such a good guy because I do everything for God. I'm glad I'm not that guy. And that guy over there, he's just pleading for mercy. But he's dismissed in the eyes of the religious leaders. Oh, if you only knew who was washing your feet. They dismiss them. You could have used that perfume there, that costly perfume, for better things than what you chose to use it for. They dismiss the woman, right? He's also saying this. We might actually be good to learn a few things and maybe even apply them. Don't throw baby out with bathwater here. That is what Jesus is honestly teaching. Because here's the thing. Truth is truth. It doesn't matter where it comes from. Truth is always truth. The question is, how is the truth being applied? To what ends? Now, Jesus uses this term, unrighteous wealth. Now, here's a problem. It's how we read unrighteous wealth. It would imply that there is what? Righteous wealth. That's not what that means, though. To say it's unrighteous, it means simply it's not righteous, because money has no righteousness. It has no positive, no negative. It just is. Now, if you serve money, or as the scripture would usually use, mammon, then you've got a whole different conversation. But money in itself is inert. Money does not make you sin, nor does it make you righteous. It just is. It's a system. By the way, not a system that God uses. It's a system we use. It's how we determine something has or doesn't have value. How much is it worth? What do I spend? So when we say that there is unrighteous wealth, it doesn't mean that there is righteous wealth. However, there is a contrast between wealth that we can amass today versus, say, in verse 9, something that seems to be eternal. Something that is later. In fact, that becomes this, verse 8 versus verse 9, right? Verse 8 implies, here's what they do with this. This is how they act. They think about today, and they kind of think about tomorrow as in the immediate. They save up for the rainy day so they don't have to worry about not being ready for the rainy, when the rain comes. But their tomorrow is simply that. It's just tomorrow. We're not talking about eternal. Eternal isn't tomorrow. Eternal is after tomorrow. And so for here, their tomorrow is an unknown. So they prepare and store up for what they can't know, what they can't trust in. But verse 9 says, no, you are about eternal dwellings. You're about something that you already know and you have hope and you have trust in. So you trust in the eternal. They're putting their trust in maybe tomorrow. And they do this with this unrighteous wealth, money. Because we have to remember that money, this side of heaven, takes care of a lot of things. But money on the other side of heaven is nothing. It's the old jokes, right? It's the guy who takes gold into heaven. And the question is, why are you bringing pavement in? That's the value of your gold. We walk on it. So let's talk about righteousness. Because I think we have a wrong understanding of righteousness sometimes. Sometimes. Righteousness is not about doing good versus not doing good. Stop making righteousness about doing anything. You don't do squat. You are not righteous. I know people hate when they hear that, but Isaiah tells us very clearly, your most righteous act, the best of the best of the best you can do, doesn't even compare to your six-month-old baby's diaper. They've done more in their diaper than your righteousness will ever do in the kingdom of heaven. Last time I checked, six-month diaper stinks. Unrighteousness simply means, now you're holding on to it, big, big Greek lesson here, not righteous. That's it. It's a reminder that your wealth, whether it be an immense amount or a lack of, has nothing to do with your righteousness. Your righteousness does not care about your bank account, positive or negative. Doesn't. Has nothing to do with it. And yet we see people make it do with it all the time. What we have is our righteousness. But it says, therefore, in 2 Corinthians, therefore we are ambassadors for Christ, God making an appeal through us. We implore you on behalf of Christ, be reconciled to God. For our sake, he made him to be sin who knew no sin, so that in him we might become the righteousness of God. We might become. The righteousness is contingent on something here. What is it contingent on? Well, that goes back to verse 20, be reconciled. Our righteousness is contingent on being reconciled to God, and the only way we can reconcile to God is because all of it has been put on Christ, in him, by him, for him, through him. And what is the righteousness that we receive? We don't receive, please hear me, we don't receive righteousness. We receive what? It's a key word here. His righteousness. Literally, you receive him. You don't receive a version of his righteousness. You don't receive righteousness like Jesus. You are literally given his righteousness. By the way, in order for that to happen, there's an exchange that takes place. What is the exchange? He takes on what? Your sin. See, because that's the contrary. That's the opposite. It's not righteousness versus unrighteous. It's righteous versus sin. So you can't be righteous because you have sin. You will never be righteous because you have sin. So what does he do? He takes the sin and he hands you his righteousness. Everything that he is, has done, will do on you. This is the good news. It doesn't transform us into righteous. Rather, we're found in his righteousness, just as we are found in Christ. This is the paradox of the gospel, right? I give him filthy rags. He gives me his robe. Tell me where that's a fair exchange, by the way. Just anywhere. Show me any store that says you come with your busted out jeans, your shoes that have no tread on them anymore, your half-eaten, well, actually, I would say your half-eaten ham, but Costco might actually do that. I don't know. Costco has a great return policy. But show me where you can take your old stuff, your worthless stuff, not trendy, not vintage, like garbage clothes. Show me a store that will say, hey, you bring those and we'll give you brand new stuff. That's the equal exchange. Show me a store that does it. You're not going to find one. That's the paradox of the gospel. That's the exchange that takes place here. It's the contrast that Jesus gives up royal robes that fill the temple, Isaiah 6, for a dirty manger and swaddling cloths. Why would anybody do that? We consider the parable of the lost sons. We have the younger son coming, The last we see in the story, where was he coming from? Pig pen. I don't think that's mud on him. He's got to reek. I don't know, maybe he took a shower in between. I don't know, doubt it. He's just desperate to get home. And what does the father do? Now we say, oh, he runs to him, but it literally, the translation literally means he fell on him. I think the picture we're supposed to get is you can't get any closer. There's no room to breathe. He falls on his neck is what he says. It says he kisses him. And we know, if you know Eastern culture, you understand what that means, right? And then he calls for a robe. He doesn't say, hey, let's get this boy a bath, draw some water. I'm sure that happens eventually. He isn't worried about whether the robe is going to get smelly or dirty. Because the robe is the righteousness, the identity of the family. This is what happens. In fact, we can go back to the first sin. And what does God do after the conversation with Adam? Yes, there are consequences. But one of the consequences is God then kills an innocent animal. And we're to presume at this point in time, this particular kind of death has not happened up to this moment. He kills an innocent animal so that they may what? Have their shame covered. You know, like a young disobedient son returning home smelling like pig and a robe being put on him. Adam and Eve certainly did not deserve to be covered. In fact, I might note they don't even repent. And yet God covers them. It's to understand that while we were still sinning against God, Christ died for us. In fact, Paul says, at the right time. That when we say still sinning, while we were still looking out for ourselves, he looked out for us. And it's because of that, completing the demands of the law, that we can be reconciled, be made right. So what does this have to do with Jesus seemingly condoning, not condemning, but condoning unrighteous wealth and shrewdness? If we go back to verse 8, we have this picture here. The master commends him and says that the sons of this world are more shrewd. They're a little bit more clever. Jesus is telling his disciples they need to consider how they are supposed to be using their resources. And why you have the resources that you have. What could you do with them? Perhaps, maybe, just maybe you should be using your resources to, I don't know, further the kingdom. And maybe you're going to use your resources in ways that, quite frankly, the rest of the world are going to be a little ridiculous, because at the end of the day, it has nothing to do with you. You're not doing it for you to get yourself ahead. But what if you use the same tactics? Now, sometimes we tend to use different phrases. The world thinks it's pretty clever, so it comes up with ideas that are actually in the Bible in the first place. One of those is random acts of kindness. Do you know there are random acts of kindness all throughout the scripture? Never mind the gospel itself. Random acts of kindness is kind of God's thing. But somehow somebody decided, oh, that was me. I learned that. So I pay for the guy's coffee behind me, thinking, oh, look how good I am. I pay for this guy I don't even know. And then he gets up there, and of course he's too humble to take it. And so he says, no, I'll pay for the guy behind me. And then they see how long that line can go. Just various, what is the motive behind the random acts of kindness? Because I think we should be having these random acts of kindness in our life, but it's not random, it's just who we are, it's who we're supposed to be, it's who we were always called to be. I think there's a measure of the gospel that is extravagant, and it's calling us to live extravagantly. That doesn't mean to go into debt and be stupid. It means to be wise with what resources you have. It means that moment that your kid is out there selling lemonade at the price of Dutch Brothers, You go out and you buy a cup, even knowing full well, A, it's not going to be good, B, it's not Dutch Brothers, and C, they used your lemons, sugar, and everything else to make it in the first place. But you did it because you wanted to demonstrate love and kindness and support. Maybe it's not your kid. Maybe it's some other kid. Maybe it's the idea that you're investing, right? You're investing in somebody, not something. Maybe we do something that's just ridiculous that at the end of the day, it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense other than it just demonstrates, I see you, I love you, I know you. You're investing in something that maybe you won't even see a return this side of heaven. Now, verse 9 makes a very odd statement. It says, make friends for yourselves. And he's just got done talking about unrighteousness. It almost sounds like Jesus is saying, perhaps you should, you know, buy people off. Spend lots of money on them so they'll love you. Is that what he's saying? Because that's what the world does. See, there's a difference, I think, you know, I use that lemonade example. There's a difference between loving somebody and maybe thinking they'll think better of you if you do it. See, this is one of those moments that the original language and the original context makes way more sense than the translated phrase that we have. The word friend, that's a messy word today. We have lots of friends that we don't even know. What does friend even mean? Now, biblically speaking, friend is your sphere of influence. Friend and neighbor are very similar. It's typically speaking of your inner circle. Friends are the people that you know. Friends are the people that you usually are generous with in the first place. Your tip, maybe not as generous with non-friends. So here it's to have more friends so you can be perhaps more generous. In fact, generosity is actually the key in the passage, even though nowhere in the script in this passage does it use the word generous. So it doesn't mean that friends are made through money. We kind of see actually the opposite of that, right, in the lost son parable, right? There's a failure in that. The accusation that's drawn is that he went and he squandered his money with prostitutes. That is to say, ultimately, whether we're talking about the oldest profession in the book, or are we talking about just simply people who will take all they can get from you, right? I mean, you see it all the time if you pay attention to celebrity lifestyles, and usually it's kind of in that more in the music industry, primarily the hip-hop industry, where people have this weird entourage. Well, they're leeches, right? I mean, they're like that weird little fish that sticks to the sharks. They're only there because they know they're going to get the scraps and they're going to get the popularity. But then what happens when the guy goes bankrupt or, I don't know, gets exposed for doing some nefarious things and he loses everything? Where are all those people who were, they were his friends? Where are they now? Well, they're running for the hills. They don't want to be associated. They're finding the next gravy boat. But here, there's something else that's taking place. It's not about that, right? I mean, everybody's your friend until the rent comes due, kind of a thing, right? We see the images. It's the guy at the craps table. Right, I don't understand the game of craps. I don't understand the chucking the dice and what is it good to get sevens? I don't know anymore. Like you roll the dice, right? But you got the guy who's on the hot streak, right? And everybody's gathering around because they all think they're going to get a piece of the pie, and then he rolls the snake eyes, and they all walk away. Now, is Jesus just simply saying, "Hey, you know what? This is the thing. You just need to be generous. Just be generous with your wealth." By the way. Wealth, when we say wealth, well, stop equating that to money. There's a lot of people wealthy in a lot of things. Money is not the only wealth. You know, we talk about time, we talk about resources. There's been times that I've encountered generosities in different fashions, and let's face it, at the end of the day, it probably somehow relates to money. We've been blessed quite a few different times where we can't really afford to go on vacation, like actually, you know, rent someplace and do the whole vacation thing. So somebody comes along and says, hey, you know, I have a beach house. Why don't you use it? Right? That's a generosity there, right? There wouldn't have been a chance to have that opportunity unless that happened, right? And at the same time, are they not in their generosity? Aren't they garnering some sort of favor? Now, hopefully they're not doing it for that purpose later on down the road, but that's the idea. The picture is, you know what? I have this wealth. Why am I holding on to it? Why would I not let somebody else use it? So unlike the shrewd manager who's doing it for future security, personal preservation, and let's be honest, you can't blame him. He's about to be unemployed. But that's not our goal, right? The disciples are instructed to do it. Actually, it says for eternal dwellings, which that should draw some pictures. And again, some fun with language only because of English, and English is horrible. But, you know, we talk about when I go to heaven, I'm going to live in a what? What do we say? I'm going to live in a what? A mansion. And of course, if we understand the actual biblical understanding of a mansion is a house with many rooms. It doesn't mean you get the whole building. You get a room. But nonetheless, eternal dwellings, where a place where there's many rooms. And last time I checked, you know, I mean, how many times have you seen? Have you ever watched a show where the celebrity shows their house with all their rooms? And there's like three people living in a house with 20 rooms. Why? To show off? Why don't you go find 20 other people? You know why we have a housing crisis? That might be it. I don't know. But seriously, there's eternal dwelling. There's many rooms. Maybe the goal should be that our wealth should be, since I can't spend it here, or I can't spend it there, I should use it here to see that those rooms get filled. Is that the point that Jesus is making? Don't secure your life on earth. Secure other people to eternal places. Be a part of it. Participate. If we consider verse 9, right, he's saying, you know, those kind of things, spending that money for those things don't fail, which that actually takes us back to Luke 12. We're gonna hit this passage twice, given the time. This is the tail end of it, though. Sell your possessions, give to the needy. By the way, Jesus, this is not talking to the young rich man. This is a whole separate moment, and it's the exact same thing, which means Jesus must have said this more than once. Sell your possessions, give to the needy, provide yourselves with money bags that do not grow old, with a treasure in the heavens that does not fail, where no thief approaches, no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there will your heart also be. I can't help but think in those moments, we had it a few years ago up the canyon. The fires come in. People's lives completely decimated, and it's devastating and it hurts. But the reality is this, there is another picture here. I'm sorry, it's going to sound a little dark. But there are people who invested their entire lives into their homes. And now their homes are gone. What are they left with? It's nothing. It's gone. That's heartbreaking. And I'm not saying they shouldn't have had a good home. Praise God they had a good home. But there are some people who will look at it and they'll be like, my life is over. Oh, last time I checked, you're still alive. But that's the picture here, right? You can have a big old 401k plan. You know, right now the big thing is it's fluctuating. Crypto. Part of crypto is everything. I don't know if you understand crypto, and you don't because nobody does, including the people who have it and the people who create it. Okay, crypto is a scam. But at the end of the day, you know what's really crazy? It is estimated that 20 to 30% of money tied up in crypto will never be touched because somebody forgot their password. And you can't retrieve. It's not like Amazon. You can't reset your password. And your password, by the way, is typically a 32-character thing. And if you don't know your password and you try different passwords, eventually it gets locked. There is money that is locked. That's why it's a scam, because somebody knows you'll never be able to recover it. But nonetheless, there is so much lost wealth out there. because people put it into the wrong place. They think I need to sit on it. It's the parable of the talents. The two guys who risked it, they doubled it. Cool. That's not, Jesus wasn't impressed by the doubling. It was their use. The other guy, he lost his password. He sat on it. Literally. I've shared the stories of my dad and when he first got into his whole 401k thing and the anxiety he would have watching the stock market. And he'd literally tell me, oh, I lost $2,000 today. I go, did you? I mean, here we are 2 years later after my dad's death. What good was any of that 401k for him? By the way, it didn't amount to very much at the end of the day. Anyways. You can have it, and the thief can come, the fires can come, the earthquake can come, the flood can come. It can be gone in an instant, completely out of your control. But we're called to have this weird sense of generosity with what it is we have. And I know you're thinking, I don't know if I have enough to be generous with. You do. You do, because generosity isn't about the amount. I mean, you got the older son, right, in the parable that we looked at last week, and he's complaining because I didn't even have a baby goat to have a party with. And the father's like, you kind of did. Because see, all of this is actually yours. Why you thought you didn't, I don't know. Maybe it's because we think that when somebody's being generous or in order to be, there needs to be strings attached or something. No. That's not generosity anymore. And that's the problem, is that we look at the shrewd guy and he did have strings attached to his generosity. So Jesus is saying, you know what? You can be generous just the same way without the strings. That maybe if the followers of God could demonstrate such a selfless generosity, maybe, just maybe, somebody might look into it and say, if they can be this way, what does this say about their God? Jesus is taking a very direct approach here, and it's very, very simple. These guys are using what they have ultimately to better themselves. And Jesus is saying, you know what? You can kind of do that too, just in a different way. You have the opportunity to widen your circle of influence, your friends. In fact, you have an opportunity to take them to heaven with you, where you can't actually take your money with you. Maybe it's appropriate that we look at Philippians, right? Do nothing out of selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility, what? Count others more significant. Right? Don't look out for your own interests, but also the interests of others. It actually says don't look out for your, not only. Which doesn't mean you ignore yourself. Don't get all self-righteous and pious about it. Oh, look at me, and I'm sacrificing so others can have. No. Make sure there's food on your table when you're putting food on somebody else's table too. How about better yet, why don't you just have them come to your table in the first place? We aren't going to be shrewd to our own end, but maybe the question is, how can we be shrewd? And remember, shrewd means to be clever. Prudent, but clever. How can we use what we have in a way? How about this? Do you sell anything? Do you have to sell things at full price? Stores tend to do. I mean, yeah, you got sales, but you know what? I've shared this before, and I don't know if it's okay for me to share it. I don't care. I like to boast in it. But, first off, shop local, right? I love our hardware store. Do they always have what I need? No. In fact, 9 times out of 10, they don't, and Mike's the first person to tell me where I could probably find it. But you know what happens, though, when they do have it? I don't know, honestly, the last time and I know this may not be true for some of you, and you'll get bitter at me, I don't know. I don't know the last time I paid full price for anything at the hardware store. I don't know if Mike just looks at me as a big charity case, maybe he's getting to heaven through me, I don't know. And I don't know how many times I've argued with Mike. Mike, you can't keep doing this. And then he'll give me some weird story. Oh no, there's this guy. Thing is, I think I'm talking to the guy, but I don't know. He says, there's this guy who, you know, he makes sure that there's, you know, don't worry, I got, it's technically paid for. You're just not doing it. Okay, Mike, I'm not going to argue with you, but you know, one of these days, I'm going to have to drop the money and run. Like the reverse of a robbery. I don't know how that works. I don't say this part boastful, but you know, it's just funny when people react. I don't know, like maybe I get a kick out of it. And maybe that's part of this parable, because I think we can get a kick out of it every now and then. But you know, yesterday, I was at the Saturday market. You know, I've been doing the 3D printing stuff, and Wendy's like, we have too much of it, you need to get rid of it. And I'm like, well, what's a better way to get rid of it? You know, sell it, give it away, whatever, I don't know. So I have a lot of stuff, right? A lot of plastic stuff. And so we set up a table, and you know, and every now and then, you know, a kid comes by and they're like, you know, they don't have the money that it is, but they have a dollar. Okay, cool. Right? It doesn't have to be full price. It doesn't have to be that. Right? Those of you know, I screen print. I used to screen print to make ends meet. I got into a place where I don't think I have to do that way. So I get very selective. I don't just screen print for anybody. I'm very, 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 very picky to the point even when I'm like, I don't feel like screen printing, I just say, no, I can't do that. But you know what? I've never charged the prices that I know other screen printers do. And I've actually had some of the screen printers in the area get mad at me. They've actually called me. Well, it's not my job. Screen printing's not my job. Helping people is, and there's an avenue there, so I do. I'm just saying that we can do that. You don't worry about losing that extra 10% that you might have gotten. I was debating this story there, and I shared this within my Sunday school class also, that sometimes I share some negative stories, some negative things that have happened in my life, and some people, are you dwelling on it too much? And it's not that. I want us to see it as a cautionary tale and a warning sign. It's not a pity me sign. It's what, honestly, most of these stories I share, at the end of the day, I just kind of have to laugh. There was this time, this happened in Roseburg. It was so odd because two different events are taking place at the exact same time with two completely different outlooks. So Wendy was in the parking lot of the Roseburg Mall there, and mysteriously unbeknownst, I have no clue why, she goes to start the car, and it doesn't want to start. It's making fun of you, and she can see very clearly the entire ground is now covered in the oil from the van that we had. It is a lake. Every single bit of it is not in where it belongs. To which then she has to call somebody to help get the van back home so we can figure out what is happening. The reason she isn't calling me, however, simultaneously, while she is on the ground, literally, I am in the air, because there was a guy in the church, a retired guy who's a pilot, personal pilot, not a big pilot, right? But any chance he got, he would go down to the Roseburg Airport, rent a two-seater Cessna, and take it for a spin for an hour. Anytime he got $2 in his pocket, kind of a thing. Like, that was the big splurge, and that was the big excitement. And he learned that I love flying. And so he's like, you come with me. I want you to, there's a second seat. Why would you sit in it? Oh, it was the most exciting, incredible things. And we would fly over to the coast, circle around Coos Bay, fly back, fly up, fly around Autzen Stadium, fly back. It was so much fun. There were times when he says, just take it, take the wheel. I technically flew. I technically almost killed the engine once. There was one time he killed the engine on purpose and blamed me, right, just to freak me out. We had so much fun. I loved every minute of his generosity. Because he could have just said, you know what, I'm going to go. Because you think I'm an introvert? This guy came to church and left church, never talked to a single soul. And then one day he learned I like flying, and he said, why don't you come with me? He invited me into that. So I'm flying. I'm halfway between here and Coos Bay. And Wendy's like, I don't know what to do. It's not like I'm getting a phone call at this point. So anyway, here's the thing. Sometimes churches have an abundance of things. Our church had an abundance of mechanics. Some of them were working mechanics, But we had one particular that was a retired mechanic. Sorry. This guy was an elder of the church. And Wendy called to ask for help. And he said he couldn't be bothered. Why would you call me? What do I have to do with it? He did finally come out, and instead of actually helping, he just criticized everything. Also mentioned how much he usually gets paid for this kind of thing. I've got a guy who can barely rub two pennies together, and he wants to share an airplane with me. And I've got an elder of a church who can't be bothered to look underneath the hood of a van of his youth pastor. Tell me the contrast. Tell me which one's generous. This guy could have figured it out. In fact, by the way that they lived, he could have actually just bought a new van. That's what he would have probably done. Now, real quick here, if you're wondering about the big mystery of the van and which mechanic finally stepped up, because we did have some other guys who came out and they're scratching their head. They're going, like, I don't get it. You're probably going to have to take it to somebody who's going to have to, they're going to have to put it on a lift. This isn't going to be handled on the ground. And they were diesel mechanics and stuff. They weren't take it to my shop mechanics. And they're really sorry they couldn't figure it out. They were really just fighting it. And then, I don't know, Wendy talked to her dad or something, and something was mentioned, and she reached under the car. She said, if you want to know who fixed the van, it was Wendy. Well, we had just gotten the oil changed, oil can Henry or something. They didn't screw the filter on all the way. It came loose. You know how you fix the problem like that? Literally. That was it. That was the whole problem. Could have been worse. Right, she could have kept trying to start it. Why? Why do we think that we need to build up some sort of legacy? Why do we say somebody else? Why do we save up for a rainy day? Why do we fail to be generous when we can be generous? What is it that's in us that stops us from doing it? Because at the end of the day, everything that we build up, all the resources, everything, and it's nice to have good things. Please don't hear that. And when you see Jesus say, give away all your stuff, he's not saying, I want you to be poor. He says, I want you to be generous. I want you to not be straddled with these things, because that's the problem, is these things. Well, it's, what do we say? Do you own your possessions, or do your possessions own you? And it's all going to fail. The stock market, it's going to fail. In fact, last time I checked, this book already tells me this. Do you know why we're in global warming crisis, whatever you want to call it? Because it's going to. It shouldn't be a surprise. It's not because you have an air conditioner. Yeah, that's the ends of the means, but it's going to happen. You know why the icebergs are melting? Because you got to get rid of the ice for the fire. I'm sorry. I love the polar bears. I do. I think God's got a special place for them. I don't know if there's animals in heaven. I think the polar bear's got a place. I don't know. But there's a moment where gold won't even buy you bread. You don't believe me? Just go back to the Cold War era and look at some lines for bread outside of Russia and Moscow. Because, by the way, it's happening again. Heck, I can't pay for bread half the time now. I walked into Fred Meyer and they wanted $4 for a loaf of regular bread. I went to Winco, it was only $2 there. But I'm like, still. Oh, it's inflation. No, it's not. It's the end. Nah, that's not the point. Circle back around. All right, we got to go back to Luke 12 again. Because this is the context. He said to his disciples, therefore I tell you, do not be anxious about your life, what you will eat, nor about your body. So in other words, don't let your generosity get in the way, or don't let these things get in the way of your generosity, or what you're going to put on. For life is more than food, and the body more than clothing. Yeah, food's good. Clothing, please. Yes. We talked a little about that in Sunday school already. Yeah, consider the ravens. Right? Notice it's not the doves, right? The ravens. They neither sow nor reap. They don't have farms. I mean, crows. Right? But God feeds them. How much more value are you than the birds. Remember, you were made by God by hand. The birds were just like, hey, let there be some, the blackbirds, go. And which of you, by being anxious, can add a single hour to his span of life? If I could add to my life by my anxious, I'm living forever. But it's exactly the opposite. Do you ever think, maybe, why is it that we see people in the Old Testament lived longer? Is it because of the environment, or was it because of their less anxiousness? I think there's an argument to be made. And he said to his disciples, therefore I tell you, do not be anxious about your life. By the way, when it says that he's, please read this not as a positive affirmation. I think it's a command. Do not be anxious about your life, what you will eat, or about your body, what you put on. Your life is more than those things, right? That's what he's saying here. So then, for all the nations of the world seek after these things, and your Father knows that you need them. So instead, seek his kingdom. Do kingdom things. That's what seek means. Seek means do. It doesn't mean go look. You don't have to find the kingdom. It's here. So go do the kingdom. And these things will be added to you. They're part of the package deal. Fear not. For your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. I don't even have a goat for a part. Yes, you do. You got more than a goat. If we just consider the shrewd manager, he's racing to secure which that is not secure. He is anxious. He has no hope for the future. So all he can do is hope for tomorrow. And he's just banking on that. We don't have to be that way. Don't let your possessions possess you. Use your possessions to further the kingdom. Become shrewd. Become clever with what you do. Quit making your life so busy you don't experience what God's kingdom has to offer. I sat with a father one time, and he's like, Mike, I just feel like I have no connection with my kids. To which I said, well, what's your work schedule look like? No, it's not about that. I said, what's your work schedule like? Oh, I work between 60 to 80 hours a week. Why? I said, are you in that much debt? No. Do you need that much money? No. Why? So they can have a better life. Oh, so you spend all this time away from them so that they can have a better life when? And without what? Why do you think you're distant from your kids? Because you're too busy making a better life for them? That doesn't sound like a better life. That doesn't sound like that's a fair trade. I would love to tell you, he said, oh, you're right, and cut his work schedule. No, instead he went to a different church. Kind of like the rich young guy who just walks away sad. I don't know. Why do we live this way? I don't know. I wish I could give you the answer. Because we're stupid. Because we don't listen to Jesus. We don't actually believe Jesus when Jesus says, I take care of you. So now take care of one another. We just don't believe him. The one who is faithful in very little is also faithful in much. In other words, real quick, simple. If I can't trust you with this little thing, how do you think I'm going to trust you with a big thing? If I can't trust you with your toys, why do you think I would trust you with my car? If you think I can't trust you, if I can't trust you with my car, why would I trust you with my house? If I can't trust you with my house, why would I trust you with my land? And it's all built on one another. So be faithful in something small. Start small. Don't start big. Because the reality is, if you can lie about a little thing, you can lie about a big thing. And then if you've not been faithful in unrighteous wealth, wealth that means nothing, right? You can't even do that. Why would I entrust you to actual riches? If I can't trust you with pavement, why would I trust you with real stuff? If you have not been faithful in which is another's, who will give you that which is your own? No servant can serve two masters, for either you will hate the one or love the other, and he will be devoted to one and despise the other. You can't serve God and money. Are you serving money, or are you making money serve you? That's the Dave Ramsey way, right? I mean, that's the whole point, right? I mean, you take what you want out of Dave. I think there's good and there's bad. But at the end of the day, he says, there's a reason for you to have wealth, and it's not actually about tomorrow. If you actually read it, most people only read half of Dave Ramsey, though. The goal isn't some golden parachute, because if that's the case, then that's all. I'm trusting my 401k. I don't have one, but if I had one, I'd be trusting it, not God. And we get trapped here. Instead, we should take a look at how does the world work, and what would that look like if I did it from the perspective of what God says. What does it mean to not be foolish like the young son who goes and squanders? It's not be foolish like the builder who doesn't consider the cost. Let's be prudent. Let's be wise as serpents. Right? We have no problem with that phrase, be wise as serpents. But the moment I said maybe we're supposed to be like the shrewd manager, you're like, whoa. You know, serpent's bad. You know that, right? So just when Jesus says to be wise as serpents, and when the Psalms tell us to be wise as serpents, and when the Proverbs tells us, it's saying be wise like the evilest thing on the planet. Because it calculates every move it makes. So maybe you should calculate your moves. Maybe you should think before you jump. But all the same, stop investing looking for a return here. Rather, invest in something that has nothing to do with you and yet has everything to do with you in terms of eternity. You know why we don't invest in certain people? Can I say it? Because you don't want to see them in heaven. I think that's the only answer. Sorry, not sorry. Be generous. Be generous in such a way that people catch you in your generosity. Don't broadcast your generosity. You don't need to put it on TikTok, and you don't need to Instagram it, and you don't need to Facebook it. Just do it. Just be it. Get caught. Let your kids see it. Let your kids think you're ridiculous because you took a U-turn to make sure a guy had water that you know full well wants other stuff. Let your kids start repeating those behaviors. Because the kingdom is like a shrewd business manager who strives to set up a better future, but not for himself, but for others. So invest in ministries. I know I'm running really late here, but I'm just going with it. Invest in ministries, not just with your money, but with your time and with other resources. Sometimes you have things. Sometimes when we say at VBS, hey, we need 30 feet of rope. You've got 30 feet of rope, bring 30 feet of rope. You'll get it back, maybe, if we don't lose it. But don't worry about it. Invest locally, invest globally. You know, we talk about missions. Don't be stupid with missions, and don't think your $2 is the, you gave $2 to that. You know, I'm on a rant right now. I came back from Australia. We had an opportunity to serve alongside Amanda and serve Amanda, meeting a need for her in her position as a missionary in Australia. But here's what I do typically on these kind of mission trips is I start to look at what does it actually take for the person that we have sent into the lion's den to actually live there. And then I get really sad because we send them improperly and unfunded, and we think, oh, our $100 makes a difference. I'm sorry. So we're there, and here's what I noticed. We went into a grocery store. Now, have you bought a case of Coke lately? Or maybe you're a Pepsi person. I don't care. A case of soda. Oh, soda's evil. Get over it. You bought a case of soda. And you know how much a case of soda costs? $10. Maybe it's on sale. Safeway has ridiculous sales sometimes, right? Buy two, get 20 free. You know, I don't know. But every now and then, it's not. In fact, anytime you want the soda, it's not. Okay, that's the rule. But nonetheless, $10. $10 plus deposit. Save the planet. When did we go to Australia? How many years ago? 10 years ago. Now, soda back then, probably more like $5, $6. Do you know how much I saw a case of soda then in Australia? Because it just caught my eye. Like, it was on sale. $20. Actually, $20.99 for the same thing you're going to go buy for $6, $7, $10 here. Why? Well, here's the thing. In Australia, everything's expensive. Plus, they also have a lot of sin tax. Sin tax is when something's bad for you, so they make you pay more for it. But the thing is, I saw everything was this price. Everything was, and we're not, don't give me, oh, that's it's conversion rate. Mm-mm. The conversion rate for that $20 case of soda here would be like $18.50. I'm still not paying $18.50. But see, we're sending a man, and so it's expensive for a man to be there. And you know what? When I got back from that trip, I made that comment about we need to make sure we are supporting Amanda and supporting our missionaries, because sometimes missionaries go someplace where it's really cheap. The dollar goes really far. In this case, it doesn't. And you know what? Somebody came up and told me, well, maybe she should have chose someplace not so expensive to go. I'm sorry, what? Are you saying that God made a mistake? Because I think God sent Amanda. I know. I absolutely know, and deep in my heart, that's why. I also know that she will be taken care of whether or not we send a dollar. But what about the invitation to invest? That you get to invest in the eternity of somebody on the other side of the planet, literally, that you won't even meet this side of eternity. We go back to Jesus and he says, you know what? You have friends, make more friends. Friends that will go into eternity. Remember what Jesus says. He says, I no longer call you servants, I call you friends. There's something very, very special about that. It's the moment in It's a Wonderful Life, right? George has come to this crisis moment. He's realized he has had a wonderful life, but the reality is he's still minus the money. Why is Potter not going to jail? I don't know, but here comes George and somebody says, you know, you're going to jail. And he says, isn't it wonderful? Because see, it's not about the money anymore. It's about he recognizes all the things that have happened because of the ripple effect of his generosity. And he's not saying, aren't I great? He's saying, isn't everything wonderful? And then there's the moment that his brother Harry barges into the room. He says, a toast to my big brother, George, the richest man in town. And then there's the moment that the bell rings and we have bad theology for half a second. Get over it. But then there's an inscription in the book. Remember, no man is a failure who has friends. If there is a picture of what this whole entire parable is, maybe we should have just watched It's a Wonderful Life. Because isn't that the story? George could have been shrewd like Potter. What has Potter got at the end? I hope Potter died of a heart attack at the end. I don't know. Here's the deal. Everything that I've taught this morning is the opposite of what the world teaches, but it doesn't mean that what the world teaches is wrong. It's just upside down. It's backwards. It has the wrong motive. So let's get right side up. Let's find the positive aspect of what Jesus is teaching and point forward to that. It's going to take a cultural shift, and I think the cultural shift, we got to stop waiting for the world to shift. It's our job. Jesus isn't interested in what your wealth can do. He's just saying, you know, you got stuff, so let's use it. Maybe there's a reason you got stuff. How about this, that in all wisdom and insight and before the foundations of the world, that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. And to understand that, that was understanding exactly who you are, where you are, what you have, and what will happen next with the kingdom, and let's go. Stop offering to take your filthy rags of some sort of self-righteousness and perishing wreaths and all that kind of stuff and thinking, oh, how great I am. Instead, exchange it for the righteous robes of eternity and let other people in on the secret. It's to understand as you come to the communion table what it is that God has already done in abundance for us. So who are we to say, I just don't know if I have enough? We talk about friends. If we're going to talk about friends, we're talking about family. We're talking about what it means to be invited into this thing. And if I'm going to say family, then I'm going to have to start quoting Lilo and Stitch, and I'm going to have to look at the word ohana. And what does ohana mean? You tell me you know what ohana means. Ohana means family, and family means nobody's left behind. Nobody is forgotten. This is what we're called to. Stop and think about it. We're about to get to Lazarus and the rich man. So excited to get to Lazarus and the rich man. Love this parable in so many different ways. But you stop and you consider the rich man. The only moment that he actually starts getting anxious is when he realizes that his family is doomed. You get to not be anxious because you get to actually do something now today for the friends, for the family. You get to choose today who you will serve. And anytime I look at the scripture, this is where I'm dropping this here. We're going to go to worship, then we're going to say one more thing. it's interesting. Every time we talk about serving yourself in Scripture, it's equated to slavery. Every time we talk about serving money, it's equated to slavery. Every time we talk about serving God, it's equated to being friend. I don't know. Which one do you want to choose? Which one do you think has the better benefits? Which one will add to your life? Let's pray. Father, we do thank you. We thank you for your generosity. We thank you that your grace is lavished upon us, that our cup overflows. That, Father, in the eyes of the world, you are reckless in your spending, but it's not. It's you are calculating. You know exactly what we need, and you say, here's more. Because there is no limit to you. There's no limit to your love. There's no limit to your grace. But, Father, may we, I don't know, maybe we'd be damned if we rejected it. Literally. But Lord, who am I to receive such lavishness and then to say, well, I'm just going to keep it now? Father, I truly believe the only time, the only reason to ever give any excess is so that it can be used freely. Father, I believe you're calling us to that. Father, we need you to show us how to do it now. Give you all the praise and all the glory. Amen.
The sun comes up, it's a new day dawning. It's time to sing your song.
And one of my favorite things in movies is when they have that little extra something at the end of the credits, and you miss it if you just get up and leave. And so here's your extra little credit moment. Luke finishes off this passage, and I didn't put it in here, and I realized I didn't put it in here. I thought, that was stupid, because this is how Jesus, this is how Luke wraps it. So I said the disciples, he turns to his disciples and he tells them this, but the Pharisees are still there, they're still there, because they're afraid to leave, because they might start talking bad about them. And it says, the Pharisees, who were lovers of money. Translation, the Pharisees were really ticked off at the moment, heard all these things, and they ridiculed him. They made fun of Jesus. Stupid. How stupid are you to think that you could possibly do that? Because see, that's my thing. That's my whole entire thought pattern here is this, that Jesus, he's not commending the shrewd manager for doing what the shrewd manager did, but in a sense of, because the shrewd manager was just hoping that he could take care of tomorrow. As long as I get taken care of tomorrow, then I got the next day and the next day. And he's just going to live each day by day.